irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We're here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible when with love on your side. I'm Henry Hebert, and today I am flying solo in the hosting chair because Taj, Terrell, and TJ Jackson are in Amsterdam for their 3T concert. And I hope y'all are having a great time, and hopefully I'll do okay here. So we are live, and so if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. This is show number 6. Today we will be looking at how loss and grief can be the gift of adversity. And later on, we will be opening up to take a few questions via Twitter. So if you have a question about our topic, which is loss and grief, and you want to ask us, then send us a tweet at DDJ Foundation. And we are not licensed therapists. We are just people who have experienced death and loss in our lives and have been impacted by it. And today, we have a very, 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 very special guest, Julie Glassman. She is someone that is near and dear to our hearts because she has been with us from the start with the foundation. And she is an amazing, amazing marketing consultant and amazing brand consultant that actually helped us with the Dede Jackson Foundation. And I'm getting a little teary-eyed. And I've known Julie for many, many years. And she's this incredible writer, lifestyle blogger of Fabulous Delicious. And she has recently filed for divorce from her husband of 16 years. And she's currently raising 2 young children as a single mom in Los Angeles. And after a year filled with unexpected change and strife, the always positive Julie, for the first time, found herself lost in a sea of despair. Faced with every major life challenge imaginable all at once, divorce, financial strife, single parenting, illness, losing her home, depression, isolation, her once magical life suddenly seemed unbearable. That was until she discovered the gift of adversity, the powerful life lessons hidden in pain and discord, the opportunity for unprecedented growth and change that comes only from utter destruction. The strength derived from welcoming and honoring pain, fear, and doubt, the courage to walk away from what is no longer working, the peace that comes from the journey within of self-acceptance, self-care, and self-love, the joy of allowing yourself to be human, flawed, fallible, and still be loved. And today we will learn how the gifts of adversity, of pain, of loss, of grief, of shame became a true transformational gift for Julie. Welcome, Julie. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Henry. You're sad. I don't like to see you tearing up.
I got emotional. We've known each other for how long?
A very long time.
For a very,
about
very long time.
10 years, 9 years, almost a decade.
And I think just connecting with your story right now, I have so much love in my heart for you that realizing how much you've overcome, and I'm happy that you're here sharing it with me, or will be sharing it with us, but I definitely am having like a moment of teary-eyed because I don't like thinking about a dear friend of mine being hurt, but yet there is that other side of what you've grown and learned and your transformation. So, let's start. Who knew having friends on would be a little bit more challenging? I didn't think it was going to be me crying at first.
Right? And I probably won't be, but we need some tissues in here for sure.
Hi.
Just in case.
All right, so where do we start? How about we start with loss of health? For 2 years, you had been having your womanly time. More
wow, we're starting with that. The opener. Let's just get right in there, Henry.
You had an increase in energy and you were losing weight. So 2 out of those 3 things on the surface doesn't sound
no,
so bad.
No, that's good. That's all a blessing. My womanly time, not so much.
But then in November 2015, you went to the doctor and what happened?
She told me I had a fatty neck, which is ironic considering everything else was sort of quite thin at the time. She just noticed some excess weight and tissue in my neck, which I listened to and then ignored, which I think we all do. I thought, okay, so I have a big neck.
Did you tell her that you were also having your period every 2 weeks?
I did tell her that, and she ran some blood tests, and everything appeared normal, which is a huge lesson for people moving forward with their own health issues, where you can't always depend on what test results say. You have to go with what's in your gut.
What was your gut saying to you?
Well, at the time, my gut was saying, ignore it. You've got lots of energy, and you're kind of, you know, doing fine. But I knew something was wrong.
Did you tell your doctor also about the increase in energy?
I did, yeah. There was definitely something going on. I wanted to get to the bottom of it. But again, I sort of, given that there were things happening in my personal life that were above and beyond health issues, I did sit on it for a while.
And in terms of increase in energy, I think you had mentioned how you were running 12 miles a day and just...
Yeah, a really excessive amount of energy that was inexplicable. And I think that now that I know what was happening, it makes sense. But at the time, it just seemed like a frenetic energy that had possessed me.
And in terms of your blood results that came back, your thyroid was okay.
Everything appeared to be normal in terms of my hormones and my thyroid. There were small sort of questionable items, but nothing that would lead you to believe that anything was really going wrong.
And your doctor wasn't worried about the weight loss?
No.
How much did you weigh at the time?
Wow, on the radio?
On the radio.
I weigh, I think at my thinnest, I was about 107 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. It was small. I miss those days.
You look amazing. You look amazing, girl. Okay, so, you know, you were scared.
I was just maybe paralyzed. I don't know if I was scared, because at the same time, I was also dealing with my marriage falling apart. And I think that sometimes stress can be not only something that plays into your overall health, but it can be something that disguises poor health. So in other words, it can lead to problems, but it can also just be something that's so much of a distraction that you're not focused on anything else. So I was sort of buried in stress as opposed to health issues and kind of ignoring what my doctor was telling me.
So you went home. Did you tell anybody about that conversation with your doctor?
Nope.
And she had recommended to you to
have an ultrasound, yeah, on my neck, which was something I thought you only did for babies, but apparently not.
So did you make the appointment for the ultrasound?
Nope.
And so then you mentioned you're having stress in terms of your marriage. What was going on?
I think that there was a realization that perhaps I was not in a relationship that was suited for me. In other words, I think it's really easy when you have children and when you've been with someone for a long time to become complacent and to just sort of accept things at face value and to sort of be in your suffering or sadness as part and parcel of what happens in long-term relationships, that things ebb and flow and that there are moments full of passion and then there are moments where there are lulls and you sort of just stay in that complacency. And while I did that for many years, primarily for the sake of my children and keeping the nucleus of my family firmly intact, inside I knew that I wasn't in the right relationship and that I needed to resolve that in some way when I was ready. And I think one of the things that happens sort of magically or through the powers of the universe or whatever you believe is that you're given a gift of the right moment, whether you want it or not. So when you have things in the back of your mind that are plaguing you or causing you stress, at some point they come to a head, whether you want them to or not. You can't bury emotion forever. So I was sort of grappling with things bubbling up and coming to the surface that I had denied or tried to cover up or compartmentalize before.
And what was the stressor that bubbled up?
I mean, I think marriages all have their own sort of issues and nuances. Ours were not unique. Money stresses and child rearing. But for me, it was the feeling of I am not with the right person. I am with someone whom I love and adore, who is one of my dearest friends, but this is not the right person intrinsically. And I wanted to deny that for as long as I could. And at some point, I realized unbeknownst to me, that I had sort of reached the end of my rope and that I was going to honor what I knew was right for me and the life that I wanted to be living, however selfish I believed that to be at the time.
And you had been married for 16 years with two children.
Yep.
So you really had built a life together.
Yes, a full and intact life together. And I think that when you have children, you stop living exclusively for self. And in many ways, most parents stop living, or most mothers stop living for self at all. It becomes about the children. And you have to redefine yourself, and you sort of lose yourself in that role. And when you refocus your attention on yourself, sometimes you find yourself drifting and sort of, nowhere.
How scared were you to actually acknowledge these feelings of unhappiness and realizing this may not be the right place for me?
It took me maybe 7 years to acknowledge those feelings and to stop the constant cycle of trying and, cajoling and adjusting and...
Were you trying with your husband?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Communicating. Maybe not in the most effective ways, but communicating, trying to make my feelings and needs known. But I think that some feelings transcend resolution, meaning that there are just some truths that are undeniable, and no matter what you do to try to fix them, it doesn't change anything. And we all have this gift of this inner voice that exists within us, and we all tend to ignore that voice and to not give it the sort of credit or respect that it deserves. And so I think for a long time I ignored that voice until the voice took over and became my voice. And suddenly everything changed.
You could no longer deny the feelings that you were having.
Yep.
That were coming up.
It just surfaced, and it felt like my entire life was exploding. And then at that time, my health issues were revealed, and so it was a perfect storm.
And I think you mentioned to me about, in terms of a marriage, where when you get married, you're these two people, mm-hmm. but you have to nurture the marriage.
Yeah, my husband has this philosophy, and I agree with it wholeheartedly, which is that there are three quote-unquote people or entities in a marriage, which is each person who's part of the relationship, and then the marriage itself. And each person brings to that marriage their individual needs and wants, demands, likes, dislikes. And then the marriage itself has its own set of requirements and needs. And if that isn't nurtured, independent of sort of the ego of the individuals or the needs of the individuals, nurtured as its own being and its own entity, it can be really destructive and it can die.
Was the marriage being nurtured?
No. I think that our individual needs and egos were being brought to the table while the marriage was sort of languishing.
And what happened in terms of, I think you mentioned that that in the course of getting married and setting up your life and having a family, that both of you became really focused on, in terms of careers, making sure you could provide so you can have everything you need for the children.
Mm-hmm.
And did you feel at one point, though, it was so much about the have to work, have to provide?
Yeah, I think you and I had a conversation about this at lunch the other day, that I have a philosophy about unspoken agreements that exist in all relationships. So you have friendships that are based on unspoken agreements, like I play the role of the social chair and you play the role, I'm not talking about us specifically, even though I'm happy to make plans for it. But I play one role and you play another, and it creates this sort of beautiful sometimes dynamic, or unhealthy sometimes dynamic, between people who come together in any sort of relationship, be it work, be it friendship or romance. And when those unspoken agreements change and one person grows or outgrows whatever they agreed to subconsciously, if the other person can't keep up and sort of honor that growth and understand that things are changing and that the new agreements need to be reached, it can destroy relationships. And our agreement was very much about who we were when we came together in our 20s. And then when we found ourselves in our 40s, even though I'm not really in my 40s, I'm just pretending I'm in my 40s, really super young.
Me too.
Yeah. When we found ourselves in our 40s with two children and million changes, our agreements were different. I was no longer willing to be the person that I came into the marriage
as. So you essentially were operating as a 20-year-old with an agreement from a 20-year-old relationship.
Yeah,
which now you're in your 40s, but really not.
Really early 40s.
Really early.
Yeah.
And so now it's like you, the growth of a relationship.
Yeah.
Having to evolve from being meeting in your 20s mm-hmm. to now we're in our 40s and having an adult relationship.
Yep. And honoring his growth and honoring my growth and redefining. And I think if you don't check in and redefine, maybe annually, you know, we have mutual friends who, sorry, I'm calling you out, Julie Swissler, who's not even listening, but should be.
But maybe now she will be.
Yeah, she should be. But she and her husband do a lot of planning at the beginning of each year where they sit down together and they do vision boards and they create their sort of game plan for the year and think about the directions.
Sounds like it's their emotional and mental game plan.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's not only about the things they want to achieve, let's say monetarily or in terms of life goals, but also how they're going to go about manifesting it, bringing it into their lives. And it's a mutual focus on the things that matter most to them. And to me, that type of relationship is just super healthy. The idea that you work together to change things, to grow, to become different than you were the year before. And I think when you allow yourselves to just base everything on old rules of engagement, and then things start to change around you and you don't learn how to retrain your thinking or how to look at a person differently or how to sort of change your stroke to swim in a different direction.
Can you feel stuck?
Yeah, you just sort of feel like my life is moving in this way, and yet I'm stuck here in old ways of being. And it's and I think that as mothers and as
do you think that feels suffocating? Or can
yes.
feel?
Oh, I mean, absolutely suffocating, particularly when, as a mom, you don't want to destroy your family. So you literally feel, I want to say that word differently, you literally, I love it when people say it like that, feel as if you have to stay because once you agree to have children, your life should be, as society tells us, in service of those children and their needs. And you mislead yourself or dupe yourself into believing that staying is better for the children. And I think that what I've learned is that being courageous and having the courage to leave and to decide that I was going to live a more authentic life and be true to myself is actually the greatest gift that I can give to my children, albeit painful. And I think that pain is also a gift you can give to your children, because when they just sort of sail through life and everything's good and, you know, you live in the Pacific Palisades and everything's beautiful and sunny, life has a way of biting you in the, can I say?
And where the sun doesn't
shine.
Can I
say, yeah. In the A blank blank, and making you, and sort of setting you up for failure. And there's something about watching how resilient my children are and how they have sort of traversed and transcended
adversity. Well, teaching them how to move through loss and grief at this age is skills that can really benefit them when
absolutely.
They're adults.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it may be painful to see, but yet it is like a huge gift because
it is.
At some point we all go through, you know, loss and grief.
Mm-hmm. I remember my son, when we first told him we were separating, collapsed and he fell on the floor and he was bawling and he said, "I will never be happy again." And as a parent, all you want to do is take that away. You want to say, "You know what? We're not separating. Just kidding, you know." And now I can say to him, think about how you felt a year ago and show him that not only is he strong and resilient and powerful and can handle anything, but teach him how time really does heal as long as you go through the process of releasing grief, dealing with feelings, talking it through, accepting where you are, It is amazing to look back and think that you can't even connect with old pain because you've done the work to move ahead forward and away from it.
You also mentioned when we were at that lunch about realizing that you were in a transactional marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think, again, this goes back to the whole notion of unspoken agreements. But I think that our marriage became largely transactional. And what I mean by that is it was about the children, their activities, bills, mortgage, car payments, scheduling. Everything became about the life around us and the way in which it affected us, as opposed to the sort of internal journey that we were on together. It was all about sort of the extenuating circumstances of our lives, as opposed to holding on to that deep sort of boyfriend-girlfriend connection that you work so hard to create and nurture when you first meet someone. We were like business partners.
It's almost like checklist living.
Yeah.
You know, we have the two cars.
Yeah.
Check. We have the house.
Yep.
Check. We have the marriage. Check. We have the kids. Check.
Yep.
Kids have to go to school. Check.
The dentist and mm-hmm. the, you know.
It's and like
the,
a list.
And the meetings with their teachers and all of these things that marriages become about if you don't remember that it's sort of the third entity that needs to be nurtured.
It's interesting, and you did mention like when you first started dating, it mm-hmm. was about feelings and romance. Emotion,
mm-hmm.
but then why then when you get into a marriage, and maybe this is part of society, we've conditioned ourselves in society that once you're married, it then becomes about this transactional way of living as opposed to still connecting with the romance,
mm-hmm.
connecting with the emotions, nurturing that love, which is what brought you together.
Right. I mean, that's sort of the great mystery, I think, of relationships, and I think it's actually quite rare, sadly, to find couples who are able to maintain that level of intimacy. And I think that, you know, it's work, and it's equal work on both sides of the relationship. And it also is pulling away from the day-to-day life in order to nurture that relationship, which we had absolutely stopped doing.
Mm. So you mentioned when you told your children how Zach collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel after that, and what did you, I think you mentioned at that lunch you went out for a run. Can you just describe what happened?
Yeah, I think that I had always lived my life in, even though I had this sort of thing nagging at me, like I don't think this marriage is right for me, I don't think I'm in the right relationship, I was able to ignore that and compartmentalize. And I
so
like
you had those thoughts running in your head for about 7 years?
Yeah, for a long time. But I was able to sort of put it away in a neat, tidy box or a series of neat, tidy boxes and file them away.
Because on Facebook, I have to say, your life looked amazing.
Yeah, my life is really good in social media.
It is like the
amazing.
Perfect, amazing life in social media.
Yeah, it's all BS, isn't it? I mean, so the reality is that but, you know, when you compartmentalize, you're able to hide things from yourself. It's sort of mm-hmm. interesting. And I was masterful at hiding things from myself and also managing my own PR, sort of putting on a pretty face and making sure that everybody saw me in a certain way. And it's funny how none of that matters to me anymore, but it did. After...
You got a little emotional there.
I did.
What were
you
thinking
about?
I did get
emotional. I just thought, like, how wonderful it feels to sort of let go, to surrender, and to understand that you don't really have to hold it all together, that you can actually fall apart and be a mess, and that mess is okay. And
it's okay to be not perfect?
It's okay not to be perfect, and it is exhausting to try to be perfect. And such a waste of precious energy and time. And I think for me, it took sort of the utter destruction of my entire existence for me to wake up and see that that I'm just sort of okay, independent of all the trappings of a perfect life. So in that, what I'm calling utter destruction, I had a moment where my children were just at the depths of despair. It was Christmas time, which is our family's favorite holiday, and filled with traditions and things that we love to do together that suddenly weren't happening. And my children were feeling just the strain and the pain and the energy that was so pervasive in our household. And we were supposed to go to this annual event that we go to every year, Candy Cane Lane in El Segundo, which we love. Which
is a great place.
Yes, it's wonderful. And meeting a group of friends there in this wonderful annual tradition, and my husband decided he wasn't going to join us. And my son was falling to pieces, and my daughter was acting out with a lot of anger. And I decided to go on a run because of my excess energy that I still hadn't resolved at the time. And I just ran, and I ran, and I ran until I couldn't run anymore. And on the way home, I saw a bus coming toward me, and I thought it would be so much easier just to hurl myself in front of that bus. And I had never in my life had a thought like that, because I have always sort of fallen up and never viewed my life in any way except for this sort of, you know, compartmentalized, PR-driven person that I created. And realizing that I had reached that place was a huge moment for me, where I literally felt like I wanted to crawl out of my skin, like I didn't want to be in my body anymore. And that's a terrifying place to be, but it also makes you deeply compassionate about people who are experiencing deep depression or loss or grief, where, you know, that empathy may not have existed before.
Were you able to then understand suicide in a way that...
Yeah, because sometimes it feels like there's no other choice. Like it's just too hard.
And too painful.
Too painful to exist.
So then, and I think you had mentioned that, like, you felt like your life was just really slipping away and you didn't know how to be happy or even identify with you anymore. And that also none of your defenses were working. And you were just like, how do I redefine? And then you mentioned you came home and you were panting and you looked into the mirror. And what did you see in the mirror?
So I guess like cardiovascularly, if that's a word, everything was sort of like pumping in my body. And I looked in the mirror and I saw this giant ball in my neck. And I had no idea what it was. And I called a dear friend and I said, I have this ball in my neck. And I made the mistake of going on the internet. And you know, the internet, like you can diagnose yourself with anything, literally diagnose yourself with anything. So I diagnosed myself with throat cancer and I was panicked and freaked out. And I called my doctor and she forced an ultrasound. And I did not have throat cancer, fortunately, but I did have, at the time, we thought it was just two, but I had two massive tumors in my throat. And one of them was wrapped around my windpipe, and they were both coming from my thyroid, even though my thyroid numbers were normal. And then I went through a series of fun things like needle biopsies in my neck and all sorts of great stuff for which I had amazing friends with me and around me. But in experiencing this at the same time as my marriage breaking up was just a huge challenge, because you no longer have your person, so to speak. And you are dependent upon your village, for which I'm very fortunate to have a beautiful village around me of friends. But there was this feeling of, oh my God, I am totally alone. And this is the reality of my new life.
And at this point, had your husband moved out, so you were living alone with the kids?
I was living alone and thinking that I had cancer, and the stresses of life in general were just so overwhelming at the time that I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And, you know, I forgot to mention this too. My son also was diagnosed at the time with a lung disease that's part and parcel of his asthma. And I just thought, how can this be happening? Like, I crashed my car. I had all of these things that were sort of happening all at once. And I think that that is the greatest gift of the universe, as I call it. And I, you know, I use that, you know, in a way that other people may say God. But for me, it really is about, like, you are given as much as you need until you wake up and figure it out. And so I kept thinking...
So the universe was piling...
Piling it on as much as possible.
To get you to wake up, to really see, to acknowledge what was happening, not only within your heart for feelings, but also within your body.
Yes. I had a friend say to me, I have a girlfriend who has a degenerative eye disease. And she is essentially losing her sight in one eye and perhaps the other. And she said to me that a friend once said to her, "What are you not seeing?" And I thought, oh, I just got chills saying that. But she said to me, "What are you not saying?" And I, because of what was happening in my throat and this tumor around my windpipe. And what I realized is I was saying everything. What I wasn't doing was shutting up. And
what do you mean?
Well, the tumor, so when I finally had everything removed, they took out my thyroid and the tumors, and it turns out that I had three tumors and Hashimoto disease, which is an autoimmune disorder that you know, had sort of ravaged my thyroid. And when you have your thyroid out, everything goes haywire in terms of your emotions and your strength and your energy and your moods and everything else. So it's kind of a perfect storm at the moment in my life. I couldn't speak as much as I used to because I'm kind of a big talker. You probably know, and I'm
trying to get a word in here.
You're like, can you be quiet? I'm on the radio. Be quiet. So I couldn't yell anymore, and I couldn't raise my voice, and I got really quiet. And in that quiet came all of the answers, because when we just stop to listen to what's going on in our hearts and minds, or listen to the lessons that the universe is providing us, there is so much to be learned. And when we are so busy talking and filling the noise, and I'm sorry, and filling the void with noise and distracting ourselves, we miss the point. We miss the journey.
And so in that silence, what was really coming up was the emotions, and you were actually feeling all the emotions that you were pushing down.
Correct.
And now at this point, you're a single mom.
Although I do want to add that my husband took wonderful care of me the entire time. So I was very fortunate.
Did you have a moment where you feel like maybe we should get back together because you were
about ill? A million moments. Not just being sick, but just like, God, this is what life is all about, is this.
Like when you're sick?
Yeah, in those moments of need and having that support and that unconditional love. But that little voice inside of me wasn't going away. So, yeah.
And so you had the surgery. Mm-hmm. Actually, though, before the surgery, you got an email from your landlord the morning of the surgery. What happened?
Yeah, so the morning of my surgery, another gift arrived in my inbox.
Gift of adversity.
Yes. Beautiful gift of adversity. I got mail. And that mail said that I needed to move out of my house in 45 days. And although this surgery is actually quite easy to recover from, I wasn't going to be able to lift things. And just the fact that I had to pack up my home and move my children, who were already so overwhelmed by all of the change.
By divorce, by loss of health.
Yeah, suddenly we were losing our home as well. And moving is really expensive. And we had not worked out the particulars of our finances. And in my sort of unhealthy space, I wasn't working as much because I run my own consulting business. I just wasn't focused. And so money was very, very tight, which was another thing my children had never experienced, fortunately, well, or unfortunately. They had lived a very comfortable life. And so suddenly we couldn't, afford things. We were losing our home. Mommy was sick and Daddy wasn't there. I mean, physically like in our home.
For you to say to the kids, you know, Mommy can't afford that.
You know, I think that's something that I perhaps didn't handle as well as I could have, because I think that that's scary for children to hear. And I think also that when your life is falling apart, it is really hard to be present and the kind of parent that you want to be. And there is something about learning to forgive yourself in your deepest, darkest human moments when you fail those around you, to still love, nurture, and respect yourself, because I was not a great mom during this time. However, I think I'm a great mom. And so there's a distinction. And having the ability to say to myself, it's okay if you drop the ball right now, and giving myself permission to do that.
What was happening in terms of with the kids and how you were handling the stress?
I was yelling a lot before the surgery, which is another gift of the surgery. I was yelling a lot. I was allowing my experience to dictate theirs. But I have to share this with you, Henry.
You were allowing the stress to take over?
Yeah, the stress took over. Because you can't think straight when you're focused on everything that's going wrong. But I wanted to say this because it's so good. A friend of mine a few days ago, who's had a lot of her own adversity, said to me, you know, I said, how do you not take it out on the kids when your life is kind of falling apart around you? Because I noticed how sort of, how unbelievably close she is to her children.
And she's a single mom as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And her story is deeply challenging. And she said to me, well, my kids are my tribe. They're my people. And when, and I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of, you know, when things get hard, I just bring them closer. I hold them and I cry in front of them and we cry together and we love one another. And they're just, she kept saying, they're my peeps. They're my tribe. And I look at my children, or up until this point, as sort of my children. They're my job. They're my job. That's the perfect way of putting it. Even though I do that job with tremendous love most of the time.
Sometimes the job can feel like a burden.
Yeah, where it was just like, oh my God, I have to feed the kids. Oh my God, I have to pick them up. I have to do this. I have to go here. I have to take care of this and homework and basketball and voice lessons and everything else that children do. And the moment she said that to me, my relationship to, with, and for my children was transformed, which is to say that now when I feel stressed, I want to bring them closer as opposed to viewing them as sort of something to be dealt with. So when I am sad or feeling down, all I want to do is sort of be with my tribe. And it's a beautiful change in perspective.
Did you also notice then when you felt the stress, instead of wanting to yell now, mm-hmm. you actually took a moment to pause, to breathe.
Yes.
To then kind of workshop with them, like, this is what's happening.
Yes.
And you work together as a team.
In fact, we tried a new exercise recently that's become sort of now a mainstay for us, which is children have a hard time expressing emotion in full sentences. When you ask them what's going on, they don't necessarily have the language to be able to describe what's going on. And so we started using words as opposed to sentences to traverse challenging situations. So just give me the words that you're feeling right now. And the words come out as sad and angry and mad. And the more words they express, the more they get to the meat of the problem. And once it's out there, it sort of disappears. And so we now use words as a way to sort of heal and express, as opposed to complete sentences and long discussions.
So through this adversity, what's amazing is you've created a stronger bond with your children now, mm-hmm. and really opened up their communication abilities and skills on a whole new level,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty tremendous to be able to give them that tool now at such a young age for them to then be able to handle loss and grief later on.
Right, right.
So, wow. So I know you've mentioned a few times that it is really scary to break up a marriage and a family. Can you just kind of talk a little bit more about that? And you mentioned you felt selfish.
Yeah, and I think that that's something I still grapple with. But there's something about divorce that is, it's so mainstream that some people minimize it because it just seems like it's a universal experience at this point. And other people are mad at you about it because they feel as if you've changed their lives as your friends.
Can you give some examples?
I think that people feel like they have to choose sides, or they question, when you are the person who initiates the breakup, they question whether or not you know what you're doing, whether or not it's worthwhile, if you can save it. They say all the things that they probably should be saying. Are you sure? And do you think you should go into therapy? And do you think that you should be working on it? Things that I think good friends should say. But there are also the comments where people imply that you shouldn't be in pain because you created this situation. So sometimes I had moments where I felt like I wasn't allowed to complain. I wasn't allowed to feel sad. I wasn't allowed to acknowledge the pain that I was in because I initiated it. So if you made your bed, you need to lie in it.
And I think, as the one who initiates the divorce and leaving the marriage, you're essentially the lever of the marriage.
Yeah.
So the lever essentially deserves no empathy because they're the ones who are deciding to walk away from the marriage.
Correct.
So you felt like, here you are. I mean, it's a loss for you, 16 years of a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, you're grieving the marriage, yet all of a sudden you're not receiving empathy.
Apparently self-created grief is not something that you're entitled to. And I think people lose the point that it takes two, and that I didn't just fail my marriage. My marriage failed me, and that there are two sides to every story. And so while I bear a lot of the responsibility for the demise of the marriage, I don't bear all of it.
Do you feel like there's a lot of judgment for the one leaving the marriage?
Yes, a lot of judgment, including from my family, where I really felt like everyone sort of felt like, come on, you know, your marriage was fine. And for all intents and purposes, it was.
For social media life, it was perfect.
It was perfect on Facebook, the perfect Facebook marriage. But I think that that is sort of where you have to dig down and find the courage to honor yourself. Your truth is all that matters. Everyone else's version of your truth is completely irrelevant.
So what were some of the intellectual comments that you would hear when you shared how you were feeling with family and friends?
Most of it was, well, you did this, so you got to deal with it. Don't complain. This is your fault. Or you can always go back. Things like that.
So you were, I think you mentioned that there was a moment that you felt really depressed and you were in bed and just in despair, not knowing if you were going to be able to get up or not. And you know, you felt really alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you had experienced some of these comments like, well, now you made your bed. And you were quite literally in your bed.
Yeah. And it probably wasn't made.
And you said something that was so amazing, though, because now you weren't so much talking at people. You had this moment of going within.
Mm-hmm.
And once you kind of cleared away all the fog and addressed the fear, because you felt there's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. What's going to happen with my life now?
Yep.
You know, I don't know health-wise. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, what's going to happen with money? How am I going to pay rent? How am I going to feed the children? How am I going to live now? How is this going to happen? And you literally collapsed in bed, and all these feelings are coming up, and they're intense because you bottled them up for years, quite literally, until your neck was literally exploding with tumors, telling you, you have to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You have to speak your truth, your real truth, not your Facebook truth, girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said all of a sudden it got quiet, and you felt like you were alone, and that you didn't have that, like, anyone that could kind of give you that strength.
Rescue me.
Rescue you.
Yeah.
Or even, like, you used to have someone you'd call for 16 years.
Yeah.
So now it's just, it's you.
Yeah.
And people couldn't quite understand what you were going through because they view you as the lever of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And you had this moment of going within, quiet, and finding forgiveness. But within that forgiveness for yourself, mm-hmm. you found this great strength, and you said that you put your hand in your other hand. And will you share that? Because I think
yeah,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, so I call it, I have little names for everything apparently, and I never knew it, but I call it putting down your weapons. And what I mean by that is that when we are in fear and when we are in grief and when we are feeling sad, we tend to run away from those feelings. It's the fear of the fear. And we fend them off with every weapon and defense mechanism we can create and come up with and muster. And when you put down those weapons and you just let the fear come in and you just welcome the sadness and you just let it sort of take over, it's gone so much faster than if you try to fight it off. Because in the fight comes sort of the prolonging of the pain. And in the surrender comes the resolution. And so for me, I had this moment where I just let it all in, this feeling of complete and utter loneliness and despair. And in that moment, I felt my spirit and my soul sort of well up within me, both sort of physiologically and emotionally, where I could feel the energy of self. And I grabbed my hand and I said, I have you. I have you.
You were holding your own hand.
Grabbing my own hand. And I realized in that moment that that's what it's all about. That as much as our relationships matter and our and the lives we build around us matter, unless and until we have that love and support for ourselves and that compassion to love ourselves, even when we are as ugly and messy and lost and screwed up as we can possibly be, when we find that peace within to just say, I have you. I'm right here, no matter what.
You really learned to hold your own hand and found self-love and self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And
but not in the absence of self-truth or reality. I see myself for exactly the flawed, fallible person I am. However, I love that girl. I really do.
And I think what's also interesting, you talked about how in learning all this, you also learned that I don't need to push my people, which mm-hmm. is your kids, you don't need to push them away with stress.
No, I bring them in.
You bring them in.
Bring
you
them
start
in.
Communicating with them because they are your tribe. You hold them tighter now. Mm-hmm. And I think when we move away from negative emotions, we're trying to protect our children. Mm-hmm. But then the stress of actually pushing the emotions down is affecting them in a
oh,
negative
yeah.
way.
And they see everything energetically. They see through their little connected eyes. You know, someone once said, and I don't know who I'm quoting, that children have one foot in heaven and one foot on earth. And I think that they have the ability to see the things that over time we start to ignore because we get distracted with all of the things that life puts in our heads and that we experience. And I think that kids just read your energy. And the more calm and quiet you go, the more calm and quiet they go. The more crazy you get, the crazier they get. And so, but viewing them as my people or my tribe, as my beautiful friend put it the other day, really allows me to see them as sort of allies and these little amazing entities that I'm on this journey with, not sort of managing along the way.
So in terms of the gift of adversity, can you share with us about that and explain?
I think really that there is no greater teacher in life than adversity, pain, experience that is not necessarily desired. I say to my kids all the time, if it were Christmas every day, it wouldn't be Christmas anymore. And to me, it is understanding that when you take the time to look at all of the chaos and madness that's swirling around you and view it as a teacher and take those lessons to heart, that you are suddenly gifted with the understanding that it's all going to be okay, and that as long as you have yourself, you have your strength, you believe in yourself, you forgive yourself, and you treat yourself with kindness, that you can and will survive anything.
And you are now a warrior?
I am. Can't you see? I wore like my superhero cape today.
And you have. I mean, in less than a year, it's like you've gone through all this adversity and I'm seeing you and you're rebuilding your life still. And now you're in this place of passion, peace, joy, meditating, reflection. And you're just in this like gorgeous, beautiful relationship with yourself. And it definitely was not easy getting here. And it's still not easy. But in terms of the tools and skills, it's becoming easier because you have these tools to move through these difficult emotions and you have a new inner strength that just is just transcending everything now. And I just see it in you. It's just so beautiful.
Thank you.
What would you, if somebody's going through this right now, similar or can relate to you, what would be the one thing that you'd say to them?
I would say put down your weapons. Stop fighting it. Allow yourself to feel everything because it is not as scary as you think. And feeling emotion, dealing with emotion, expressing emotion is so soothing and healing. And if you have the courage to face what's going on inside of you, you will get to the other side of it. If you keep running away from it, you'll never stop running.
And I'm going to take one question from social media because we have to go soon. Miracle Baby One asks, will I ever recover from losing my friend and be happy again?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. I think that friends come into our lives at different stages, and there are friends that are there to teach us different lessons at different times in our lives. I read once that people come into your life for two reasons, as a blessing or a lesson. And if you are willing to view adversity and pain as a lesson and see the situation that existed between the two of you clearly and with a lot of sort of egoless thought where you acknowledge your role in things and can learn from it, your next friendship and the friendships that follow will be better, healthier, and more beautiful. So this person was perhaps both a blessing and a lesson. And yes, you're going to be fine.
Going to be okay. Thank you so much, Julie. We hope if you find what we're doing is helpful to you, then you'll help us turn grief into positive action by donating to our foundation, the Dede Jackson Foundation. A donation of any amount will make a huge impact on a child's life and empower them to grieve, grow, and heal. Thank you so much for considering this opportunity to make a difference with us. Please spread the word. And thank you, Julie, for sharing your story of grief and loss and how you found hope and inspiration through the power of love. And we are not licensed therapists. We are people who experience death and loss in our lives and are impacted by it. And if you're wondering how to make incredible decorations for the holidays, look for a meal that will impress but is on a budget, or maybe looking for style finds that aren't going to break the wallet, then check out Julie's Fabulous Delicious on Facebook and Instagram. And the handle on Instagram is @fabdelish, D-E-L-I-S-H. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. And to all our viewers, we are here again next Wednesday from 1 to 2. And the guys will be back next week. Yay! And if you have any questions that you want answered, please send them to social media. Visit our page. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the Dede Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.